It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Facebook is the biggest social media platform in the world. The company claims over 3 billion users, more than a third of the population of the planet. Mark Zuckerberg once said that he wanted Facebook's user base to grow 10% every year forever. Many of the features that led to the company's explosive growth also caused major problems on the website and in the real world. The site fostered hate speech, drove polarization and conspiracy theories, and even enabled drug and human trafficking. And another platform owned by the company, Instagram, had measurable mental and emotional health impacts, for the worse, especially for teen girls. And people inside the company were aware of these problems almost every step of the way. Our next guest worked very closely with the woman behind many of those revelations, Facebook whistleblower Frances Haugen. Here's Haugen at a Senate hearing in 2021.
The company's leadership knows how to make Facebook and Instagram safer, but won't make the necessary changes because they have put their astronomical profits before people. The company intentionally hides vital information from the public, from the U.S. government, and from governments around the world.
We're talking about the many problems that have come to light over the years with Facebook. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think Facebook has lived up to its promise of connecting people, or in your view, has it done more harm than good? Have your own Facebook or Instagram habits changed as the platforms came under more public scrutiny? Do you see problematic posts and misinformation in your own feeds? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Jeff Horwitz is a technology reporter at the Wall Street Journal and author of Broken Code, Inside Facebook and the Fight to Expose Its Harmful Secrets. He won several awards for his reporting on the Facebook Files, a Wall Street Journal investigation into the platform. Jeff, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, certainly. Thanks for having me.
I want to start with some of your reporting that just hit the Wall Street Journal today, Jeff. Very relevant to what you write about in the book. You write about, again, you talked about this in the summer as well, Meta, the parent company, ongoing problems keeping pedophiles off of Facebook and Instagram, and the recommendation platforms actually promoting groups with harmful child sexual content. What is going on?
So this work actually kind of came out of the book project. The issue here is that Meta is extremely good at personalizing content for users depending on their interests. That doesn't mean that they know everything about you or that they somehow know everything you like. It means that they can detect patterns of behavior among users. So let's say if you and me consume similar content and like similar things, they might suggest that we should get to know each other, or that we should, if you like a page, that I should follow it too. These are the sorts of connections that sort of the algorithm draws. And it turns out that is great for getting people connected with their hobbies and with people they might want to know. It's also very good at building really insidious networks. And in this instance, we're talking about people who are interested in sexually exploiting children. The work we've done over the last 6 months, I think, demonstrates that even following young gymnast influencers, like gymnasts and models, basically just kids, is enough to trigger Instagram to start recommending sex content. Now that might not seem like a natural thing to do. If you're interested in children and gymnastics, therefore you're probably going to be interested in sex. It turns out that a large community of people who are interested in that stuff are following those children, and that as soon as sort of someone acts in a similar way by following them, the platform sort of starts probing to see what else they might like that kind of really toxic community is into. This isn't something brand new. This is an understood problem inside the company. It just comes with running kind of black box recommendation systems. They're very efficient, but they're very hard to control. And it's the same sort of thing that, led to fomenting the Stop the Steal movement related to the 2020 election, which was a, very heavily Facebook amplified claims of election fraud in 2020 that preceded the January 6th riot. So this is kind of a it's kind of to some degree more of the same, though I do think obviously that if you can't recommend content in a way that is safe related to children, that does seem like something that's problematic for a trillion-dollar company.
And this, with example after example, seems to be a running theme, a tension between what boosts user numbers, user engagement, the amount of time people spend and interact with Facebook for the most part, this applies to Instagram as well, versus integrity teams and others within the company raising concerns about the impact, the harm it could cause, and that drive to boost the numbers mostly, almost always, winning out. Can you talk about that tension you saw emerge over your reporting?
Yeah, so this is a, I think, a fascinating thing, which is that you wouldn't necessarily think it's the case, but on a practical basis, the growth of the company ended up being, shall we say, negatively correlated with the quality of the content that was being distributed. In other words, the more vitriolic, the more aggressive, the more salacious, the more clickbaity, the more violent. Or pornographic, the content, generally the better it did. Now, there was a limit to that, but if you're just posting the most obscene things in the world, eventually your account's going to get taken down. But the it turns out that, and people inside the company were warning about this for years, that if you just boost things based on whether or not they get a response, you don't get great content. I think a number of employees memorably noted, it's great. It's a great way to promote cat videos. It's not so great when it comes to health information or political news or anything like that. The what was I think became very clear is that the platform was regularly getting gamed by bad actors. So maybe that was Russians, but generally it wasn't. Generally, it was just anyone who figured out that you could get to the top on Facebook by just professionally posting. The crazier the better type content.
Let's talk about Facebook and polarization. We've seen official statements from Facebook over the years. You report on some of them, I think, saying, yeah, we're a reflection of polarization in the world. We're not causing it. But you trace stories in places like Poland and here in the United States, elsewhere around the world, where politicians are realizing we want our message to get picked up on Facebook, it has to be more negative. It has to generate more anger. What happened on Facebook seems to have driven the way people do politics. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, and this is astonishing, and it applies on both the left and the right. In some countries, it's more on the left. In some countries, it's more on the right. Depends on the country. But pretty early on, well, I shouldn't say super early on. I don't think the company understood what they were doing at first. But by 2019, it was very apparent that the way that they had sort of turbocharged engagement on the platform, which was really rewarding content that received a lot of emojis, comments, and reshares, that really rewarded some of the angriest content you could find. What happened is that a lot of political parties that were sort of professionals at trying to get attention, right? That's what political parties try to do. Understood this and were, in fact, they told the company beginning to change not just their messaging, but even some of their policies to take more aggressive, radical positions because that was the only way you were going to succeed on the platform. Like posting about health, health policy or education policy, wasn't going to get you anywhere. Whereas, saying that your opponent, is a criminal and a traitor, was going to do quite well. And the company understood this. In fact, they could even sort of track the way that content was being amplified that met these criteria. There was, and yet they didn't change it for years. Now, in the last couple of years, they've kind of backed off of this a little bit. They've sort of softened some of the edges. But there was no question internally among the people who were assigned to work on this stuff that It's not that Facebook was making the world inherently more polarized. I think they're trying to demonstrate causally that, the platform is responsible for some offline activity. Turns out to be really hard. But what the company could clearly demonstrate, and just by just simple A/B test type experimentation, was that ways that they changed the platform directly altered how, sort of the tenor of political debate, whether things were more measured or more angry. And in the end, angry turned out to be better for engagement, and that tended to be where the company went for a number of years.
Jeff Horwitz is with us from the Wall Street Journal. His new book is called Broken Code: Inside Facebook and the Fight to Expose Its Harmful Secrets. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen the quality of your experience on Facebook or Instagram change over the years for the better, for the worse? Did the experience change to nothing? Did you give up on either or both platforms at some point? Do you think social media companies have a responsibility to make sure their content doesn't do harm in the real world? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up the conversation with Jeff Horwitz, technology reporter at the Wall Street Journal. His new book is called Broken Code: Inside Facebook and the Fight to Expose Its Harmful Secrets. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Are you one of the many Facebook or Instagram users who have reported problems with sleep, work, or relationships because of heavy use of the platform? Do you worry about how Facebook and Instagram's incentives are affecting you or your kids or our political system? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Jeff, a key point of your book is, I think sometimes we might have looked at Facebook from the outside and seeing them kind of stumbling blindly into some of the problems they've had and then playing catch up. But a key part of the story you tell is there were people on the inside, a lot of them actually raising red flags at every step of the way, it seems like. Can you talk about who was putting up that fight within Facebook?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I think, look, it took a while before people sort of really figured this out, right? There was a time period, I think, when everyone sort of accepted, everyone internally at least, accepted the, statements by Mark Zuckerberg that, Facebook was just going to be a force entirely for good. At one point, Mark even said that Facebook and social media would end terrorism in the Middle East because people, once they connected with each other, could, wouldn't be able to hate each other anymore. Obviously, that has not worked out. Only really after 2016, and I think the ugliness of the 2016 election online, did people at the company really start like kind of coming to terms with the idea that perhaps not everything was always going to be for the best. And yeah, I think there's sort of a period of a couple of years in there where, for the first time ever, really, instead of studying what makes people use the platform more and building more features that they think people might like, they actually start studying what they're doing and how their own systems work. And I think there'd been a lot of blind spots about that, and they did hire up a lot of safety staff, right? People who had a lot of the engineers, data scientists, political scientists, user experience researchers, just kind of this like kind of army of social scientists and computer scientists that were there to sort of study how the platform actually worked in practice. And they were assigned to things like trying to avert genocide or trying to figure out whether in fact Instagram was potentially damaging to young women's body image, and under what circumstances that could occur. And so I think the fascinating thing is Facebook really did open up its wallet and spend on this stuff for a while, based in part on some of its leadership's, at least taking these concerns very seriously. And what they found was, I would say, generally not good. It was that the way the platform was optimizing itself was for the benefit of the platform, not so much for its users.
bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Liz is with us in Milwaukee. Liz, hi.
Hi there. My comment is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. What did you want to bring up, Liz?
Well, I've been on Facebook for a long, long time, and I remember when news stories used to come up there a lot. The problem is there isn't anything anymore that is newsworthy. I mean, it's biased. It's so slanted that it has caused this great divide between opinions. And if we had unbiased news organizations actually broadcasting just the facts, I think it's something that could educate people, because there's a lot of people spending too much time on social media that have no clue what's going on in the world except what they hear on their one favorite news site.
Liz, thanks a lot for the call. That reminds me of a moment, Jeff, where Facebook tried to poll its listeners, I think, and say, hey, what is a credible news site? And they actually found people looked at a range of conservative, liberal, moderate sites, however you want to define them, and said, these are all okay. And they defined ones that were less credible. Talk about that process a little bit, and what, if anything, came out of it.
Yeah, I think, you know, judging who's credible and who isn't is always going to be a somewhat fraught and subjective process. And so one of the things that people inside Facebook, now Meta, tried to do was say, okay, well, let's just ask users, right? Let's not make a decision on it ourselves. Let's, take that out of our own hands. And I think one of the interesting things was that at least back when this work was getting done, this is circa 2018, people on both sides of the political spectrum in the U.S. actually thought that both MSNBC and Fox were credible news sources, certainly compared to like some of the fly-by-night publishers that really only existed on Facebook. So we're talking here, you know, some of them were run by kind of Macedonian high school students. Some mm-hmm. of them were just run by, domestic Americans who were just trying to sort of like get clicks any way they could. And, they actually did, you know, this is one of those things that you can build pretty easily, which is that, you could reward publications that were understood to have what they called broad trust. That work was pretty heavily watered down in the end. The company, I think, and in particular Mark Zuckerberg, was deeply uncomfortable with the idea that that the platform needed reining in the first place, right? In other words, the general philosophy was, well, if people are clicking on it, that must mean it's the better source of news. And as for what the caller was saying in terms of sort of the you know, her concern about kind of the decline of content, I think it's worth noting that the version of Facebook that we use now is not the same version of Facebook that people were on in 2010 or 2011. The whole thing has been sort of revamped via black box recommendation systems. So this is just kind of, you're looking for, as I was referencing earlier, just kind of very, very blunt correlations. And then you simply promote whatever makes whatever variables are going to make the overall engagement number go up. And, so used to be that you didn't see content from people that you didn't know, right? Mm-hmm. You only saw stuff from people you followed. Well, it turns out, though, that if you're trying to make that 10% annual growth in time spent goal that you alluded to earlier, that's not going to be enough, right? At some point, you catch up with all your friends and now you're caught up. So what the company did was just sort of keep on pushing the frontier in terms of what it recommended. That was something that I think, for a lot of the employees, they, just really didn't put much thought into quality, right? It was almost a point of pride, which is that they were neutral because they didn't pay any attention to, or they didn't try to make any judgments about quality whatsoever. The problem was, is that not making a judgment about quality is the same thing as making a judgment about quality, right? This is something that, it's not like the incentives are completely different in the news business and the one, what you and I do. If we say crazy stuff, really aggressive stuff, that'll get more attention. But I think we kind of hold ourselves back. The interesting thing is machines don't do that.
Thanks for the call. We're talking to Jeff Horowitz about his new book, Broken Code, Inside Facebook and the Fight to Expose Its Harmful Secrets. Jeff, you mentioned at one point the company had hired up more safety people. I think that has changed over the years. And even at the most, there is a whole world of people speaking different languages and lots of challenges, including human trafficking organized on Facebook, violent attacks organized and sometimes filmed on Facebook. Is there enough safety staff to deal with those and the many other problems on the platform?
In the sense of like being able to take down all the bad stuff, no, and there never will be. I think, you know, the company, it really, safety did not come first at the company. When they expanded internationally, they regularly expanded into markets where they literally did not have a single person on staff who spoke even the main language of the country that they were going into, let alone, you know, in places like India, where there are scores of languages spoken by, you know, by millions of people each. They simply just didn't do it. You know, some of that, I think, is an issue of just funding. But there was also just kind of the issue that I think a lot of the people internally came to realize that just trying to like remove the bad stuff was a losing game. First of all, defining the bad stuff is hard. And second of all, the tools, you know, that basically the AI and algorithms that detect problem content are candidly much less effective than the ones that promote content to boost engagement. It's just a harder task for a lot of reasons. And so what a lot of the people who did safety work at the company kind of converged on was the idea that actually, rather than moderating the platform more, they had this kind of, the better move was going to be just to slow it down, to not recommend content when you didn't know what it was, to perhaps make it so that things didn't move quite so quickly. Maybe you didn't need to be able to invite 2,000 people per day into a group. I think there's a famous example internally. It was a single person invited 400,000 Americans into QAnon related groups in the course of 6 months, right? Now that's fanatical, obviously. Just imagine clicking 400,000 times on that, right? But at the same time, the platform really was vulnerable to anyone who was willing to put in the effort to manipulate it.
And that's where we'll leave it. Thanks to our guest, Jeff Horowitz. His new book is called Broken Code, Inside Facebook and the Fight to Expose Its Harmful Secrets. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to The Ideas Network.